Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren along with my co-host Doug Wells. And we had a beautiful summer-like weekend. But Doug, I think today's the day the weather changes a bit.
I don't know if it's coincidence or not, Larry. You're gone for 2 weeks. We have two of the nicest weather weeks of the whole fall, and you come back, and now we're looking at snow.
Well, I guess it's a good omen. I should be a hero in town then.
We are a ski town, so the snow does need to come.
But the forecast is rain developing later today, a 70% chance, and then rain, snow likely tonight and next couple of days. So that's what we have to look forward to. And what we have to look forward to during Mountain Money today is a conversation with the editor of Kiplinger Reports. And this is a financial newsletter that's been in business and circulating to a subscriber list for generations now. I know my dad subscribed to it 40, 50 years ago. Jane Clark is the editor of Kiplinger Reports, and we're going to talk about talking to your family, talking to your kids about money. How much should your kids know about your family financial situation and how much they're likely to inherit and how it'll be managed and all those things, an important subject that a lot of people shy away from. So
it is an important topic, and I'm glad we're going to be able to have this discussion. I think a lot of the listeners, it will start getting them thinking about this important topic as well. Our second guest is going to be Marty Weimer. Marty is the owner of A Spoonful of Comfort, a really clever idea, which is if you have any friends or relatives that are going through some difficult periods of time, maybe an illness or lost a job, something like that, and you think, well, what can I do to help? That's what Marty's business does. It gives you some items that you can send, like homemade chicken noodle soup, just items of comfort that really you think about is hard to get anywhere else. So I think that's a clever idea. I'm interested in learning more. And then our final guest is going to be Brad Casper. Brad is the owner of Dr. Phone Fix out by Kimball Junction. We all have very expensive computers that we carry in our pockets. We call them smartphones, and they're not cheap to get repaired, and Brad's business is focusing on that right here in Park City. So you're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
This is Tom Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, and we're happy to support KPCW. Prudential Utah has been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976. Our agents know the community and the local market. More information can be found online at prud-utah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and we now have on the line with us Jane Clark, the editor of Kiplinger Reports, to talk about an article in their latest newsletter. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, we're having a little phone difficulty. Let's see if we can address it here. Are you with us now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, we're going to keep working on that. And in the meantime, we'll talk about... Okay, she is here, so let's... Are you there? Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. Our board gave us a little trouble. Well, welcome to Mountain Money, Jane Clark, editor of Kiplinger Reports.
Hi, for having me.
Well, our pleasure to have you, and we've had a Kiplinger editor on before, and you're always full of good information. And the topic today is talking to your family, mainly your kids, about the family financial situation. And I would imagine, as you did your research and others research this topic as well, Fidelity Investments, you talk about a study they did, that this is one of those topics that's kind of like talking about sex with your teenagers. It's one that people tend to avoid.
In fact, studies
right.
show they'd rather talk about sex than about money,
and
believe it or not.
And that's actually easier, I guess. Why is that?
Right. Well, you know, most people don't feel comfortable talking about money, for one thing, because they don't want their kids to get too complacent about the idea of getting an inheritance. They want their kids to be able to make a living on their own and not be counting on mom and dad leaving them a bundle. They also don't like to think about their own death or old age. It's kind of an uncomfortable feeling to think, oh, someday you're going to be checking out and you need to plan for that. And as you said, people do feel uncomfortable talking about money generally. It's just always considered a private matter, and even if it's your own children that you're thinking about discussing it with, you just feel a little weird about it. So, and then for their part, adult kids sometimes don't want to discuss money or their parents' money because they don't want to think about their own parents' death. So it can kind of go both ways. People just want to steer away from that conversation.
So, Jane, is this a discussion that only people with millions of dollars need to have with their kids, or is this something that everybody, every family should deal with?
Yeah, not at all. Every family should consider having this conversation. It's really one of the most important discussions you can have, in addition to letting your kids know where they stand in terms of an inheritance, even a small one. I mean, money is money, but kids need to know where you stand on that and where they stand, but also it lets them know whether they need to worry about supporting you in your old age. If you're worrying about running out of money, it's good to give them a heads up that you might need some help from them. And finally, if you're planning to give them help with their expenses, say covering the college bills or making a down payment on a house, you know, it's good for them to know that up front so that they can plan accordingly also.
So at what age... the high school years or junior high years, I guess, is when you have the sit-down talk about sex. When do you start talking about money? Because it's kind of useless information if handed out too early.
Well, I don't think that you really need to wait too long. You know, obviously you're not going to discuss it with your toddlers, but I think high school could be a time to just introduce the topic and let people know that it's okay to talk about money, it's okay to talk about budgets and so on. Get your family used to the conversation and comfortable with it, and then as time goes on, you sort of introduce more to the conversation. But I think it's a good idea to get your kids comfortable talking about money.
In fact, I think, so I work in the financial advising field, and so I've got many families that I talk to about these issues. And Larry, your question, when do you first start talking to your kids about money? That college education, who's going to pay for college education, how much the parents can afford to help? Probably initially sometime, you know, junior high, so that the kid knows how much that they need to be saving and whether they need to have odd and ends jobs, or whether, you know what, they can explore things that are more interesting to them academically and not have to spend time at a part-time job to save for college. So it actually starts pretty early, wouldn't you say, Jane?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a really great point about letting children know what the expectations are going to be for college. I mean, the sooner the better on that conversation.
So talk a little bit about how you start that conversation. It just seems like if you're sitting down with your kids that you're kind of unwittingly sending a signal that you are going to pass away at some point in the near future. I can see sitting kids down too young, and they start needlessly worrying that the end is near.
Well, you know, again, if they're comfortable talking about money and if you've made it clear that you're comfortable talking about money, I don't think it necessarily has to be like that. But that said, you could use a life event like, you know, say you're turning 40 or turning 50 or whatever the event. You could use that as to initiate the conversation. You could use a news event or a neighbor's circumstance to introduce it, or even a hypothetical like, well, you know, if I were to die early, you know, here's what I would want to have happen. So there's a lot of ways to ease into it. But again, the more you talk about finances, the more everybody is going to be more comfortable with that.
And I would imagine there are some really disastrous scenarios if you never have that conversation and, you know, something tragic happens, a car accident or something, and they're left to figure it out on their own.
Right. I mean, that's terrible. And also, you know, if you haven't had that conversation, chances are you haven't set up all the mechanisms that you need to so that they can carry on. So it's really, it's the whole family is involved in these matters, and it behooves you to clue them in as to what's going on.
Yeah, and Larry, your question is excellent, right? How early do you do it, and what does that discussion look like? And I think, you know, the money piece of it is important, but I think what people often forget is it's these non-monetary. The money's easy to divide. If mom and dad say we're going to divide it equally, that's very easy. The hard thing is, you know, who gets the grandfather clock that dad brought over from Germany, or these heirlooms that mean who gets mom's wedding band? Those are the types of things that if you don't have the discussion with your kids ahead of time, that I've seen families argue over. And nobody wants that, right? I mean, you spend your whole life building this cohesive family unit. And the last thing you want is if you don't plan ahead of time, it can be disruptive and destructive, frankly, for your family.
Right. It's actually good to set up a system, or at least suggest a system for divvying up some of those personal items, which I know families can get very hung up over that. And so if you have a system for, like, choosing, you know, choosing straws or whatever, that so there's some sort of objective way to go around the family and divvy up those things, that's always helpful. But, again, you know, it's also good to discuss with your family if you're not leaving things equally. I mean, what if one child may get more because that child maybe doesn't have a career that's going to pay as much as the others, or that child has been giving you the most care and has incurred some expenses, then it's really best if you talk to them about that. However uncomfortable it might be, it's good to talk about that while you can actually explain to them why you made that decision.
And Jane, that's great advice, because that issue, when a parent decides, I'm not going to split things equally, I'm going to split it equitably based on my view of,
right.
of the situation, I've seen... Mm-hmm. That, in my opinion, is probably the most important thing that you need to bring up with your kids. Otherwise, there will be arguing between the siblings
right.
after your death.
Right. And hurt feelings, too. And you don't want your legacy to be that you've caused dissension among your children, or that one is hurt at how you handle things. I mean, it's much better to just let them know your thinking while you still can.
Is that a... Does that happen with a lot of family successions, that assets are not divided equally based on someone's job prospects, or the fact that one has five kids and the other's unmarried, that those sorts of things? I would think in all circumstances the simplest thing to do is just divide everything in thirds if you have three kids, but that's not necessarily
right.
the
yeah.
fairest way to divide an estate.
It's really a philosophical thing. I mean, I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way. It's really, you know, at the end of the day, it's your money, and you can do what you want with it. But I think the point is that you want to try to let people know in the most diplomatic way possible why you're doing what you're doing.
And I think oftentimes after people give it some thought, their goal is to be equitable. And the vast majority of the time, Larry, equitable is splitting it evenly, but it's not always the case. If you have parents that paid for one sibling to go through college, including medical school, so they paid 10 years of education after high school.
Yeah, and the other got 3 or 4 years.
The other got 3 or 4, right. Then I've seen that happen. And you'd be surprised. There's a lot of situations where equitable, the most equitable way to do it is not splitting it evenly. Jane, you have in your article an example of where one of the siblings is the primary caregiver for the parents as they get older, and the other siblings are out of town and don't have to worry about that. They're probably equitable is maybe that sibling gets a little bit more as a way to say thank you and to compensate for that work.
Right. That is, you know, that's true. That can happen.
Now, talk about choosing an executor. At some point, you have to have somebody administer what's left, and it's generally a family member. And what is the, it's probably preferably preferable that it's a family member, but how does one go about deciding who among your family should be an executor and not send a message to the others that they aren't worthy of it?
Well, I don't think it has to be put in such an emotional context. Sometimes it's kind of obvious. I mean, it's maybe the family member that is just geographically closest to someone who, you know, knows where everything is and can kind of, it's already kind of maybe handling some of the day-to-day finances. So that's one possibility. The other thing is maybe one of your adult children is better with money than or more organized than the others and or has more experience with money. So I think that you can explain it to the rest of the family in a way that makes sense to everyone. But again, it's good to do that.
Yeah, and be aware if your family's having the discussion on who should be the executor of mom and dad's will. It's a big responsibility, and some estates are fairly complex. It can take 2 to 3 years, sometimes, often not, but sometimes it can. So it's a big responsibility, and if you have a chance to not be the executor, my suggestion is to consider that.
Right.
Now, talk a little bit about just organizing your life, financial life, because I presume if there's a sudden, whether it's a sudden death or one that's anticipated, you know, a lingering disease or something, you still need to leave your financial house in order. What are some of the steps you need to take as you get toward the point at which there may be a handover of your assets? What kind of documents, what kind of decisions do you need to be making?
Well, obviously you want a will. You want to have your a durable power of attorney drawn up that gives someone, presumably somebody in your family, the authority to handle your financial and medical care. You also want to have a list of all your accounts so that they're easily accessible. That would include bank, credit card, investment, and retirement accounts, and also your household bills and your insurance so that everyone can just find what they need if you are incapacitated or if you die suddenly. So another important thing to have is medical release from your doctor that will get access to your medical information. Otherwise, privacy laws are such that they might not be able to know what's going on with your medical care. So there's a bunch of documents that you need to get together, put in one place, and again, just the financial accounts that you have, passwords and so on, that they can have access to in case they need to take over for a while.
Yeah, and Jane, just a couple that I would add to that. One is the state will say, for instance, with a financial directive, I believe they're good for 3 years, but oftentimes the bank itself will say this has to have been signed in the last 12 months. So
really?
You do want to talk to your bank about that and make sure that the bank will honor it, because making sure that you can pay mom and dad's heating bill and mortgage and all that if they become incapacitated is really important. The other thing I would add is wills are great. Trusts oftentimes simplify things, and a trust sounds complex, and a lot of people think, well, I don't have enough money to merit having a trust. The trust just really sets by contract ahead of time how things are going to pass and can make it a lot easier for your executor down the road, and it doesn't have to be that much more expensive than a will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I'd say is there's been so many changes in the estate planning law in the last 3 or 4 years. Now, we think we have the foundation in place now, but it's probably something that you need to revisit more often than you think. If you did your will when your kids were young and they're now graduating high school, it's probably time to revisit that. In fact, probably every 5 years you should consider revisiting your will and sitting down with your attorney. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. It doesn't have to be expensive. But there's some changes that you're both in your life as well as in the law that you're going to want to have reflected.
Great point.
Okay. One thing you advise is to not get down to specifics of dollars. Jane, you're going to get $700,000 and Joe, you're going to get $700,000 because I know from family experience that end-of-life care is really expensive, and eats up a lot of money at the end of life. So you're not suggesting that you get into dollar specifics, or just in more in general terms, so they know if it's a couple hundred thousand or a couple million, I suppose.
Right. Well, one thing is that, you know, things do change, as you point out. So what you're talking about today might be very different from what ends up happening later on in terms of how much money you have to work with. But also, people tend to kind of glom onto the specific numbers. If you introduce that in the beginning of the conversation, they might be still thinking, wait, you know, my brother's getting this amount, I'm getting this amount, and you've kind of lost them for the rest of the conversation. So it's probably better to just start with the general picture, and then as time goes on, maybe you can fill in the details a little bit.
Okay, well, thanks. Good advice. We've been talking with Jane Clark. Thanks very much for joining us, the editor of Kiplinger Reports, talking about the family money talk you must have. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Jane, enjoyed chatting with you. Thank you.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the changing weather. It was just so summer-like yesterday, but rain, 70% chance expected later today. Low of 30 tonight. We should maybe hear the snow guns crank up one of these days.
That would be nice.
With ski season around the corner. Snow is likely in Park City tomorrow night, and a chance on Wednesday. So the season is changing for a ski town, changing in a good way. And we will be back to talk with Marty Weimer, who started A Spoonful of Comfort, when we come back.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Money. We just spoke with Jane Clark, an editor at Kiplinger Reports, about the money talk that you have to have with your kids. Hopefully that was, I found it to be good advice. Hopefully you found it to be good advice as well. In studio with us now is Marty Weimer. She is the owner of A Spoonful of Comfort. Marty, welcome to KPCW.
Thank you.
I gave a little bit of a teaser at the top of the hour. I don't know if you heard, which is, you know, when a family member may have something bad happen and you're wondering what you can do and they're out of town. There's not really a whole lot that you can do, but you experienced this yourself, and you were looking for what kind of gift could you give, which was the catalyst for your business. Give us more background. What does Spoonful of Comfort do?
Okay, absolutely. You know, this company was started and based on a personal experience that I had. It was October of about 5 years ago, and I got that dreaded call that nobody, you know, wants to get. And my mother had been diagnosed with cancer. And like you said, the worst part about the news, at the time, she was thousands of miles away, and I couldn't be right there to comfort her. And so jumped online to send her something, but nothing felt appropriate. There's tons of flowers and candy and fruit baskets, and nothing just felt appropriate for this situation. And I thought, what do you send someone who's sick? Chicken soup.
Right.
You know, it's what she, like many mothers, used to make to comfort me. And I couldn't find anybody who was making and sending it and sending something in that personal, kind of emotional way that would fit the situation. And so tragically, I lost her 6 weeks later. And this idea would literally wake me up at night. I have no background in the food industry, and thinking, how could I ever put something like this together?
Right.
And just slowly, you know, you kind of put it out there and doors would open. So many people came to help along the way. And so we just started. And, you know, I thought friends and family have to tell you it's a great idea. And so when I launched, they had ordered a few. And it caught on. So recipients would turn around and send three, and we just organically began to grow.
So what is the product line? What do you sell, and how do you sell it? Is this an online only business?
It is. So think of like a Harry and David or an Edible Arrangements, and we send chicken soup care package. So it's handcrafted, handmade, old-fashioned chicken soup. And we send rolls and cookies and a number of accessories depending on the situation. So maybe tea and honey, or you could add a we do college care packages where we do cozy socks and hot cocoa for college students, right. And we ship it anywhere in the country.
I love it. I mean, this is really the promise of the internet, right? Somebody can have a great idea. It doesn't take millions of dollars to get it going, and you've been able to do that. So chicken soup, cookies, and I'm guessing like chicken soup has to get delivered overnight, so it's FedEx, the next day it gets
there?
Well,
we actually have special packaging with gel packs and insulated liners, and we can ship anywhere from 3 days to overnight.
Well, okay, I was assuming this is a dry mix, but
no.
you're sending
ready
chicken soup
ready to consume.
Eat,
yeah. Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, because that's going to get eaten.
Yes.
As opposed to dry mix that'll get on a shelf.
Exactly.
Well, you know, many years ago, my father-in-law caught an 80-pound halibut in Alaska. And I'm like, great, what are you going to do with it now? And he actually had it FedExed to, you know, he had it filleted and sent over. And I thought, if you can send a fish FedEx, you probably send mail anything at FedEx. And,
yes.
And this is proof and concept here as well.
Absolutely.
So, what about like the gift of the month? I would think something like this, like I would sign up for something like this, or actually I'd sign my parents up for it, to send them something once a month. So every month they get something that they normally wouldn't have, that's a nice little treat.
Exactly.
And they're like, hey, Doug's a pretty good son. Thanks for sending that.
And you
do
know,
you do
we,
something like that?
We don't have the official program up and running yet. We're working on that right now, but we already do. We have some customers who just say, okay, I want you to send this every month, every other month. And that's the main recipients that they do for aging parents.
Right.
And it's just a great just touch of warmth to send
right,
them.
Right. So yeah. Tell us about your – we're a business show, so tell us a little bit about your business. You're based here in Park City.
Yes. So our offices are in Holiday.
Okay.
I live here in Park City, but our offices are based out of Holiday.
And how many employees?
Okay. So we outsource quite a bit of what we do. In a way, it lets us keep our – costs variable to what we're doing and down. And so we outsource our commercial kitchen and all that manufacturing. We currently outsource our warehousing and fulfillment. And that just lets us get into the business without right. all that overhead right, right up front. And so okay. as we grow and get to a certain level, the plan is to then bring that in-house and under our roof. And right. But for now, this is actually working really great for us.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And I would say the difference between success and not is, you know, you can afford to pay a premium to outsource the cooking and the preparation of the food. It's really about how do you find people. Right. How
right.
do you acquire customers? How do you keep the ones that you have? How do you get those customers to refer to other people? And so how do you do that?
I know that's and especially, you know, we're still 3 years young. We're, you know,
right.
we consider ourselves still a startup and we're bootstrapping, trying to make this happen. And to acquire customers on a national level
is challenging.
So
you use Google?
We do. We do
Facebook?
A lot of SEO.
Yep.
Pay-per-click.
Which is search engine optimization. When you do a search on Google, it's basically how does Spoonful of Comfort show up for sure on the first page
yes.
and preferably as high on that page as possible.
Exactly. We do a lot of that, a lot of pay-per-click. And, you know, we do some social. But for all the hype, I mean, I hope it's okay if I can be candid since
sure,
it is a business.
Yeah,
for all the hype we've heard about social and what it can do to build your business, it is one of the... It's fantastic to have, and I love it for the community. But as far as acquiring customers through it, it's not been as successful as all the hype about it is for us. And so
I wonder why, because we do hear really positive things from users. And I just saw something the other day. You know, Facebook has changed their ad, so you can build a relationship with people on Facebook. But then you can also buy an ad, and I've heard those ads are amazingly effective. I saw a stat the other day. It's 1,800 times more effective than other, which is a huge, staggering number, Larry.
Indeed.
And I guess it's because you can target so
and that's
precisely.
What I was gonna, they are now have made those changes, figuring out it better ways to utilize that. And so we are expanding into that a little bit right now, figuring those ones out.
Marty, what you're doing is what so many people want to do, and we have quite a parade of people who come through the corner studio on Monday morning on Mountain Money talking about how they did it specifically. And I want to ask you some specifics that can be takeaways for people who have a great idea. But first, I want to compliment you because you're in the business of making people feel good, and you brought pumpkin chocolate bread this morning.
And I took the first bite of mine. It is delicious.
but okay, so you have the idea. I want to send prepared foods.
Sure.
Take the orders over the internet. So did you start with $1,000, $10,000, $25,000? Did you do the old cash advance on the credit card?
Absolutely.
How do you start from idea to implementation?
And it definitely, I thought I was going to start with $1,000, and then it became $5,000, and then right. It became $10,000, you know, and so that's something maybe I was a little naive at the beginning of what it was going to take. At the same time, the business grew into be bigger than my initial thoughts of what it was going to be and where
and
it was.
It takes money to grow.
And it takes money to grow, and more money than you plan. And you just – the thing, though, is proof of concept. To start out, just do it. I think a lot of people get caught up in not wanting to start until it's perfect.
Right.
We started with 3 items and that was it, and got it out there. Are people responding? Are they buying? Are your customers? I think our biggest, okay, we're onto this. Our senders were coming back and resending, and our recipients were converting to senders. And so as we gained a little confidence, then I was more confident investing more to grow. If that makes sense.
Okay. The phrase you said was get it out there. Just get it out
there.
Just
get it out there.
Okay. How do you get it out there?
Friends, families.
How did you get your website built? Are you a programmer? I'm guessing
absolutely
not.
No. And so I guess I'll say 2 things. I hired a designer. Now there are a lot of sites like Volusion, there's another
Square
one.
Square Trade's a big one.
Yes. And I think they make it a lot easier nowadays to be able to launch and start something like that. There are a lot of resources out there. You know, now I can find designers on Etsy.com who are fantastic and who are affordable. It doesn't
That's
have to
clever.
Be go hire a huge ad agency to do it. So it may not be perfect out of the gate, but just start. And then as it grows, you can always go back and improve. So,
I mean, at some point, you need to have economy of scale. I could see starting out and having someone order a quart of chicken soup, and it's you're spending half a day making a quart of chicken soup.
Exactly.
So, at some point, you've got to have enough volume to make it worthwhile, and in the meantime, you're subsidizing it.
Right, and it's kind of at the beginning, it's blood, sweat, and tears. You know, I was doing everything myself, working the classic 18-hour days, and I think, like you say, in terms of scale and growing, don't be shy to have the conversations with the bigger companies that you may need help from, that maybe you're small for them now. Some of them will take a chance on you to kind of help you get going. And I think originally I was nervous that we weren't big enough for some of these, like I said, outsourced, whether kitchens or fulfillment. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there who want to help if you just ask. That's, and that was a big thing for me.
That's a good point. And being so close to Salt Lake, where you have commercial kitchens and you have, you know, big advertising agencies or whatever you need, is nice. What about the fact that you live in a resort town? I could see this as being a nice outreach for you as well to get the word out. Have you been able to use the resort community to help you get the word out about your business? Maybe the Montage or Deer Valley, sharing this with their guests that it's out there.
You know, we haven't. We
write that down.
I am going to write that down. We do, in terms of the community of Park City and friends and family and the schools, we've been able to use the community in that way. But right. I do need to do that.
You know, it's kind of the High West model, right? Larry, we've had Dave Perkins on the show a couple times. And, you know, High West is a very successful restaurant here in town. But part of the value is Dave's also building a national brand for high-end whiskey and vodka. And the fact that there are people from around the world coming to this town, I think, has really helped him succeed in that piece of his business.
It very quickly gets a local concept spread.
And I see a connection, a similar path, obviously non-competitive too. So Dave would be a good guy for you to chat with.
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a fantastic idea.
Okay, so your products right now are, let's get to what your products are,
okay.
What they cost.
And your website.
And where you order them
okay.
from.
Okay. So our website is spoonfulofcomfort.com. We have care packages that range anywhere from $25 up to $90, depending on what you want to include in them. So we have chicken soup with a number of accessories to add on. Like I said, rolls, cookies, sweetbreads. We have cozy blankets. We do tea. We're adding honey within this next month. And a number of inspirational tokens and books, and depending on the occasion that you would be sending for. And, you know, when you compare, I think our pricing is right in line with what you would pay to order flowers. But this way you can have something a little different that sticks out and feed a family.
There are a lot of gift websites out there. Is yours, do you have much competition in fresh prepared foods?
We don't. And
really,
I was going
to guess there is.
Which is a blessing and a curse, because part of our marketing is educating that that's even an option. To even know to go look to send chicken soup, that's a little bit of a challenge that we have.
I think
have.
It's a bigger blessing than it is
so,
a curse.
Yes.
Yeah. And it does allow you to expand into, once you get the relationship, now how do you get people saying, hey, you know, mom said that chicken soup was good. I wouldn't mind getting some of that myself. And then you get the gift of the month.
Exactly.
And now you get the higher lifetime value from your customers.
Well, very fine. Thanks for joining us, Marty Weimer, this morning, owner, founder of Spoonful of Comfort. Again, the website?
SpoonfulofComfort.com.
It doesn't get easier than that.
Thanks so much for having me.
Perfect. Marty, thanks for coming in, and thanks for the treat. The pumpkin bread is delicious.
And we'll be back to talk about fixing your cell phone and a new company starting up that can help you do that after this.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Do you know that members of the Park City Chamber Bureau have access to a wide array of benefits that give them an edge in the local marketplace? We offer members-only insurance and discount programs, business-to-business networking opportunities, and much more. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to Mound Money. Larry and I are sneaking in some last bites of the pumpkin bread here.
Who can speak the clearest at the moment with the pumpkin bread?
Absolutely. Our past guest was Marty Weimer, owner of Spoonful of Comfort. And in studio with us now, we have Brad Casper. He is the owner of Dr. Phone Fix. I said at the top of the hour, we're all carrying around $500, $600, computers in our pockets now. And these things occasionally break. And when they do break, it's nice to have a place that you can take it to get it fixed. And that is, I'm guessing, what Dr. Phone Fix does. Is that correct?
That's correct. We'll fix all types of electronic devices, tablets, computers, phones, a lot of phones, we see.
So I think I saw a interview with you in the Park Record a couple weeks ago.
Correct.
And your background is in electronics in the military, is that correct?
Well, not necessarily my background. I did go in the Air Force in 1973 as a telephone installer repairman.
And you're still in the telephone business 4 years later.
Spent a few years
phones look a bit
doing
different
that.
Now.
Yeah, and then I spent 30 years working for UPS.
Okay.
And then I retired from there, and now I've come full circle. I'm back in the cell phone, on the phone repair business. So.
And were you looking, so it's a franchise, right, Dr.
That's
Phone
correct.
Fix?
Yeah.
Were you looking specifically in the cell phone business for a franchise, or were you open to any franchise idea?
I was open to a lot of ideas. My background with UPS was in human resource management, and I looked at some franchise placement services. Those type of businesses, and kind of opted out of that. I was had one of those jobs where I would go down and get on the airplane every Monday morning, be back Friday afternoon.
Right, that gets old quick.
Got old, and I looked at that same type of job, not necessarily flying, but, you know, that type of a high-pressure job and or business, and I opted to look for something a little closer to home where I can stay close by. Smaller business type idea. And,
so is Dr. Phone Fix a storefront, or
yes.
Do you do everything through the mail?
No, we have a storefront.
Okay, yeah. One in Park City. Where at?
We're in Kimball Junction. We're right next to the liquor store. Address.
You don't need to say anything more than that here in Park City. Everybody listening
that
knows exactly.
That dials it in a lot. Okay, so what can happen to a cell phone? I would think the biggest thing is simply people drop them.
The breakage. The breakage is probably our most common repair. Screens. We have buttons freeze up. Charging ports fail to work.
Water damage.
Water damage, that's a whole different animal. It's in itself, but that we do see that. The biggest thing about water damage is the sooner we get it, the more likely we are to save it.
So I don't want to – it's an aside, but we do have a wide listening audience. So you accidentally – you're washing the dishes. You accidentally knock your cell phone into the water. What should you do?
Call me. Bring it down.
Well, I've heard
turn it off.
The idea is don't turn it on.
That's correct.
What if it's already on?
Turn it off. If you have to make a choice, turn it off.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Good to know. And I see a lot of people walking around with cracked and broken screens. So that's a typical repair. What would that sort of thing cost?
Well, it depends on the phone. To give you an idea, an iPhone 4 right now we're charging $79.99, $80 to do that. I've got some ads out and mention the ad or talk to me, ask me for the discount, and we'll do it for $68.
That's a great price because I've got, you know, Apple sells insurance on their phones,
right.
And I'm a chicken, so I got the insurance. But I think they still charge me with the insurance. I still pay $75 or $80.
You'll pay a deductible. Depends on your carrier and who you're with and how much you're paying for that insurance plan usually. Most of them have a deductible with them.
By the way, this is totally off subject, but watch those phone insurance things. We had a phone damaged, and we were paying insurance and wound up with a $300 deductible, which was more than
bizarre.
The phone was worth.
Yeah.
You have to avoid that trap. But I presume there's a lot of things you can't fix, like if the circuit is shorted or something like that.
Circuit boards, some software issues. Sometimes the phones will freeze up, and we've got programs where we can get in and root out a lot of stuff, but there's some that we can't get.
And is that what you get with a franchise? You have access to a software program that can analyze a phone?
Some of the software programs we use are commercial. We can purchase them outside the franchise. And for the most part, you know, I have what the franchise provides for me really is that the expertise. If I'm stumped, I don't have something, I can't get something done, I've got techs, I can call on the phone. How do we do this? How do we do that? Some of the guys back there who are their technicians have been doing this stuff for a lot of years, and I very rarely can present a problem they haven't seen.
Which brings up a great point, and actually I think it would make an interesting show, which is just focusing on franchises and how do you make that selection and what does that process look like? If you hadn't done Dr. Phone Fix, what was your second franchise choice?
Well, I can tell you, I didn't want to be in food.
Right, that's a lot of work. Food's a lot of work.
And we looked, actually.
Which is most of the franchises.
Right. Actually, we had, my wife is a nurse, and we had talked about these home health care industries, you know, where you, some of the words are that, or the talk is that the baby boom generation is going to be one of the most stubborn generations ever to move out of their own home.
Probably.
And these companies are this in-home assisted living care, send somebody out, help with the cleaning.
And there's franchises that are franchises set up there. Really
that do that.
Interesting.
And we talked about that. The thing I see is that's really going to peak in about 10 years. And if you're not in the game now, you may not be in a player when it's at its peak. You know, if you wait till the big boom, till the generation is into their 80s as opposed to just being in their 60s and 70s now, you're going to see you're not going to be in the business to or you have to be in it now to be there when that really peaks.
It's a tough decision for folks. You know, it's a really important decision. You know, for folks that want a franchise, choosing wisely is really important. I think Dr. Phone Fix, there's a lot of things about it that I think would be appealing. I'm guessing you don't have crazy hours, right? There's not as many moving parts as, you know, a restaurant, as simplistic as it sounds, is actually a very complex operation to run. You probably have just a handful of employees. So this sounds like, from what you were saying at the top of the hour, you know, not wanting to get something really complex, it sounds like it's a really nice match.
Small enough that it's manageable, that we don't have to go anywhere, and I don't have to travel, I don't have to leave town, I don't have to go out of town overnight.
So how's it going? Are you ahead of where you thought you'd be at this point? You've been open, what, 2-3 months?
Well, our first store opened in June.
So you have two?
We have two stores.
Or more than one, at
least. Where's the other?
In South Jordan.
Really? Okay. Well, it's adding a little complexity here.
and what's the competition? I presume Apple is more than happy to fix your iPhone, and so are the other carriers, aren't they?
The carriers,
so you have some pretty stiff competition, don't you?
That's true. The carriers will take your phone in exchange, and then they will send you out another phone, usually a refurbished phone. And the advantage to coming to us is, again, the deductible on the insurance. We're usually competitive with that in terms of repairing the phone. You get your own phone back. In most cases, we can do it the same day you bring it in. And
if you're on an Android, which, Larry, I know you are, that's a big plus. And an Apple phone, it's not that big of a deal if they give you a different phone. But I don't know. How do you back up and restore your phone if you break an Android? I don't know how people do that.
I just make sure I don't do that.
There you go.
But I'll find out the day it breaks.
And that's the advantage. You get your phone back. You get your data. We don't have to download, upload your information.
Even as easy as it is on Apple, unfortunately, I've gone through 2 or 3 phones for various reasons. It's still a pain. Even though all my programs are backed up, you lose your passwords and stuff like that. So it's nice to get back your phone.
Your phone, yes. And it's the advantage to coming to us.
Okay, well, Brad, thanks very much for joining us. Your franchise is Dr. Phone Fix. You have locations at Kimball Junction near the liquor store and in South Jordan. Why'd you pick South Jordan as opposed to any other location in the valley?
We did our research. We did our homework. We looked at the demographic profiling of the areas, the competitive analysis, and we determined that South Jordan was a solid location to put a store.
I would think just about anywhere is a good place to put a store, really, because we all have smartphones now.
That's correct. But, I mean, in the competitive analysis side of that, you want to be the only player in town, really.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And or at least have that.
Are you the only player in Park City?
As far as I know, as far as our
research. As far as I know, you are.
I mean, there are people up here who do some repairs, but we are the only storefront that specifically does this. And we have the full selection of accessories as well with that.
All right. Well, best of luck. Again, thanks for joining us. Our guest is Brad Casper, owner of Dr. Phone Fix. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be back to wrap Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And I love hearing from people like Marty Weimer, Doug, and Brad Casper, who's earlier into his startup business, but people who just have an idea and say, go for it.
Well, and those are two really good examples, right? One, Marty's challenge was, I think, quite a bit more daunting because she had an idea, but really, how do you put all the pieces together, which is what a franchise can help you do.
And I wrote it down, what she said. Just get it out there.
Yep.
If you have an idea, just get it out there. Don't let it simmer forever and ever.
Well, and you think about it, right? 20 years ago, how would she have gotten that business out there? It would have been expensive. She would have had to send catalogs out to people. And how do you target that audience? It would have been almost impossible to do her business. And now it's still daunting. It's still challenging, but it's very doable.
Exactly. And so many of the hard costs of starting up a business are renting a space and posting last month's rent in advance and a damage deposit and all of that and buying all the equipment and then trying to start. But you eliminate most of that. You still have to have a kitchen for chicken soup, of course, but you don't have to have that
storefront.
Most
of us have a kitchen in our house, though, so we're covered there. But, you know, it is interesting what Marty said, which is, it. You know, she started off thinking it was going to cost $1,000, then $10,000. It does cost more than you think it's going to cost, so, you know, just be prepared for that. But, you know, a large part of that was driven by growth, and you can control that, right? You could slow down and say, I just don't have the capital for this growth.
Yeah.
So not just welcome back to Mountain Money after the break, but welcome back to you, Larry. You were in Paris.
You were 2 weeks in France. And you know, one thing that I hadn't been to Europe for many, many years. I made several trips during the Olympic era, but that's long gone for the Salt Lake bid, and I hadn't been back in a long time, and I was struck by technology and how far advanced Europe, Paris especially, seemed. They had cool things that I'd never seen.
Like what?
That there are early adapters on. A lot of them are energy efficient. They have rent-a-bike stands that are smart card enabled. You slide in your card, you pull a bike off the rack, and the lock releases, and you can pedal all over Paris and then return it to a similar stand. And it'll.
That's two blocks away where you wanted to go. You don't have to take it back to where you got
No. And these stands are all over, and you just look for your destination, plop it back in, and it charges by the half-hour increment, and away you go. They have a similar thing with electric cars. They have electric cars plugged into charging stands, and if you're a member, you just go grab a car when you want it and return it to another stand.
I know Washington, D.C. is pretty far along on that. It's part of the community. If you have the right type of community, I would guess San Francisco is there.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, it's not going to work in dispersed places, but in metro areas where there's so much congestion. I mean, Paris is a medieval city, and they weren't planning for cars in the Latin Quarter in the year 800.
It's probably like New York City. You don't want to own a car if you live in Paris.
No, and so those struck me. And then a lot of American and these V-Lib bike stands required a metal chip, a smarter charge card than a lot of American charge cards.
And I've heard that.
And waiters take care of your bill while standing there with a portable device, and it prints out right there.
Really?
And they don't have to run back to the charge stand to take care of your check.
It allows them to spend more time being rude to the Americans then.
except,
did you experience that or not?
Well, except there was none of that in 2 weeks. I mean, this whole French attitude thing that you hear about, as long as you make an effort to speak in their tongue, they'll very quickly catch on that it's not your native language,
right?
And they'll help you through it. You know, at least everyone in the service business, which was most of our contacts, so found no attitude. We're just thoroughly charmed every day of the trip. So
I'm glad to hear that.
So a lot of interesting technologies that they're more early adapters on than we are. At least in the parts of the states that we're familiar with, which is the West here. Well, I do want to remind you of a couple of things. tomorrow at this time on This Green Earth, co-host Chris and Nell will have an interesting conversation with Rob Windsor and Hannah Jenner, two sailors who are planning to sail 5,600 miles from France to a place in Brazil next week. A lot of fun environmental gizmos on their boat, and they'll be talking about it tomorrow on This Green
Seems
Earth.
Seems like a tough time of year to be crossing the Atlantic.
Well, they must, they're sailors. They must know something
sure
about
they
the
do.
Currents to do it. And next week we'll have Devin Thorpe with Mountain West Capital Network and CEO Chris Rothy from Radiate Media, which is Utah's fastest growing business. And I want to thank our great sponsors, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, Iron Mountain Group, Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, and San Francisco Design. Thank you one and all, and thank you, Doug, for being here while I was gone. And this is KPCW Park City.